Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Today, we are pumped because it is the return of our weekly Wednesday visit with Doug Matthews as we go on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Chad, it is time to talk some college football, and we know the season is here when it's time for Doug to join us for the first show of the college football season.
August has arrived, Hutton. Yep, it's amazing. Here. August 1st, and we are 2 days away from camp opening for Tennessee. We get to actually talk some ball with Coach Matthews.
Time to bang some hats.
That's right. It's time to bang hats.
Doug Matthews with us. Great to have you back for another year, Coach.
Good to be back, and certainly appreciate the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, of course, sponsoring this. Great folks, and it's important to remember that a lot of things can happen on these highways. Yep. That are out there trying to help things.
I want to get your initial impressions first. On you were out here watching some of practice with Dave McGinnis. What stands out to you when you come to a practice like this compared to practices over the years you've attended?
Well, the two things really stand out. Number one, I have not been out here probably 4, 5, 6 years to a practice at this facility. Number one, the upgrades that have been done out here, truly a tremendous practice area, 3 beautiful fields and all the room you'd ever need. Not so much now, but one of the things that jumps out at you when you come out once season starts is there's not many players.
Right.
Compared to a college team, they got, what, 58 or however many?
53, yeah.
53, however many.
Plus a practice squad.
Plus a practice squad. But that, and then just the athletic ability, which you expect. And, well, they got 100 out here, I think, now, and they're going to be cutting that. So you got 45 guys that probably certainly aren't going to be here. And just the overall athletic ability, even the guys that are going to get cut have a lot of ability.
Let me get your take on this. You've observed Jeremy Pruitt's spring practice. How do you, and over the years, walking into the first fall practice of the season, what's different from that, the overall feel of that practice compared to what a spring practice would be like in college football?
Well, huge is this. Spring practice is all about individual improvement. You don't really worry about the team aspect of that much because you don't have a game you're getting ready for. You just want to find out who can play. You know, are they getting better? Find out what their weaknesses are so they can work over those through the summer months. Once fall practice gets here, you got 30 days, about 25 practices to get ready for a 12-game season. So now everything's about the team. You may spend a little time with players who have already been there to find out if they have improved to where they can help you. But now that all these colleges are going to do, let's take Tennessee for an example. They've got 17 new players that have never stepped foot on practice field before coming in, most of them freshmen. They also have 12 players who were injured that they did not get a look at last fall. So they're going to be looking at those 29 players. How many of them can help us? You've got about 2 weeks to do that. Every team will, in all likelihood, try to have their rotations ready to go at the very least 10 days before that opening game. Most of them will have it done 2 weeks before that opening game. In other words, we know the however number it's going to be at each position that's going to be in our rotation. Now, that could change a little bit if you have an easy opening game. Let's take Tennessee. They're playing a team that's going to give them all they want. So they're going to have those rotations set 2 weeks before. Then you get that game plan in for the first ball game.
Well, and that was going to be my question also. With Tennessee, you're not playing ETSU in the first week. You don't get to ease into the season. Is it typically the first 2 weeks would be, let's fill the roster out, let's see who can play, then you start to mix in some game planning? Or because you only have 30 days and you're playing an offense like West Virginia that's a little bit different, certainly from a defensive standpoint, do you start from day one, maybe for a few minutes of practice, mixing in something that you're going to work on for West Virginia?
Chad, you do, but the team doesn't know it.
Okay.
You start the game plan again that 2 weeks, probably the Monday after the 2 weeks out, whatever, how many, what is that, 12 gate days out. But what you do in practice is, and we used to do this all the time, and they'll also do this when you have opponents you probably, the next 2 weeks, let's say for Tennessee, you know, ETSU and UTEP, you'll put gate plays in there, I guarantee you, to get on tape from Florida, from Alabama, from Georgia. So you get a look at those, and then you come back when you're getting ready for the game and bring those plays up and show them how you did it. Because they're probably going to be plays that somebody's going to run anyway. But, no, you don't put the game plan in at all until 2 weeks before that opening ball game.
I'm going to sound like a coach here, but it'll be the first time. Why don't they get more practice time this time of year? NFL's camps are underway. There's no OTA or mini camp. You mentioned the 17 or 18 players that will step foot on campus for the first time and be on a practice field. Couldn't they benefit from more time early on, especially those newcomers, to kind of get acclimated to everything?
You would think so, but not really. The reason they have 4 weeks now is because they took 2 days away. You can't 2 day pad practices away. Remember, now they're just like a pro team. They don't have that 20-hour rule, so they can literally have those players over there from 6 in the morning breakfast up until they eat dinner that night and then come back if they want to. But here's the other part of it, John, is that because of the new rules, every one of these players have been on campus for at least the month of July, at least, and some of them more than that, the guys who were early enrollees. So they get an opportunity to work with them and meet with them twice a week. And then, of course, you've been to the UT practice facility. Oh, yeah. Everybody has this indoors. Those assistant coaches' offices are sitting right there looking out the glass at them. So you really get plenty enough time in there. You really do. And the other part of it is, they know going into this season, even Tennessee does with the new staff. They know about 85% of the players who are going to be contributors for them this year. It's that other 15% that you're trying to figure out who it is. And you got a pretty good idea on that because, again, you've had them all on campus for at least a month, and you've been watching them and taping them, and you know what they're going to be able to do.
We know Pruitt's path to becoming a head coach and the impressions that other coaches have made on him along the way. How confident do you think he is in the planning and the process of running a practice? Did you observe it from that angle when you watched him in the spring? And is there a feeling out process for adjustments this time of year for him being a first-time head coach?
He is tremendously confident. I would use the word cocky a little, but not in a bad way. Kind of like John Gruden is cocky, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Gruden was a grad assistant at Tennessee. He was confident and cocky then when he wasn't doing anything but going and getting coffee for us. but the reason is this guy's got 5 national championship rings. He's been around 5 national champions. He's been a defensive coordinator at 3 different big universities, so he knows what he wants. Now, the question will be, how will he? The practice is going to be no problem. He's got that thing down to a science, knows exactly what they want to do there. What's going to happen game day? You know, that's when the head coach comes out, you know, taking timeouts, going for it, you know, that's one thing that we'll have to see. But I would say this, because he has been with Mark Richt, Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban, because he's watched them on the sideline and been with them. And you can bet he knew, once he became a coordinator at Florida State and Georgia and then got to Alabama, he knew he was going to be a head coach somewhere. Now, I don't think he probably thought a school like Tennessee would be that first job. So he was already honing those skills to be a head coach. Now we're going to find out what he can do.
Well, and you mentioned something that jumped out to me that you just said, Coach. He knows what he wants. He clearly knows what he wants in the recruiting trail. He's going out and getting some pretty good guys early in the process of what he wants for the future of this program. I guess then for this season, the question becomes, does he have enough of what he ultimately wants on this roster to have some success? Not the ultimate success that he wants to have, but to have some success in this league. Does he have enough of those guys to do that?
I believe he does at most positions. Defensively, the area where they're not close to what he wants is the cornerback position. But, you know, the old saying, you got to learn to put a square peg in a round hole every now and then. He's going to have to do that. Now, what will he do with that? In all likelihood, Tennessee will play a lot more zone coverage than he normally would. But that's fine. You can do that. You can play some matchup zones. He's got the wherewithal to do that. But really every other position, assuming pretty good health, and you never know. Let's just take offense for a second. You got Juwan Jennings back, who didn't play a snap last year. Juwan Jennings is one of the top five players on this team. I think could play anywhere in the conference at some position. Maybe it'd be defensive back. On the other side of the ball, you got Darren Kirkland Jr. He didn't play a snap last year. Those are two big-time football players. You add in Trey Smith being healthy. Maybe Chance Hall is back being healthy. Got a couple of transfers in there. Suddenly, this team becomes a much different-looking football team. They're bringing in three grad transfers and four junior college players. So that's seven players that have had at least 2 years of football out of high school. I expect them to be a good football team. Hard to see how they're going to be great. But if one of these quarterbacks can be an exceptional player, and we don't know that, if one of them can do that, making plays down the field, this can be a really good, really good team. I don't think this is going to be a team that will lose games. I think if they get beat, they're going to get beat. Now, there's three or four teams that's fully capable of beating them.
And they play them all in a row.
But I don't think you're going to see it. This is not going to be a team that's going to make a lot of post-whistle penalties, late hits, things like that. It's not going to be a team that's going to have to use timeouts. They're going to be well-coached and well-schooled in that area. And that's really all you can ask for right now.
We are on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
News came down yesterday from Chris Lowe of ESPN that Trey Smith will be eligible to play this year, suffering from blood clots in his lungs. In the report said maybe 7 to 10 days into camp is when he'll resume full contact. How big is that for Tennessee? A lot of speculation about him this offseason, but clearly a really good football player in his 1 year there.
Of course, inside the athletic department, that was known, but because of the HIPAA laws and all of that, couldn't make any of that stuff public at all. It's huge. Listen, he was the leader of the offensive line last year from about the first week he was there, so he certainly is going to be that this year. And from what I have been told by the main people up there, I think this is more of a precautionary thing, again, because they got 4 weeks to get ready. So he'll be that. The question is going to be, where's he going to play? It could be interesting where he does play. They haven't really announced what they're going to do with those offensive linemen. They got several of them that can play certain places. You know, if you can play left tackle, which he can, you can probably play anywhere. And I don't think he's probably going to be working at center, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's not somebody they might move around a good bit. One of the things to kind of look for is, and I know that they've had this conversation. One of the things that Coach Fulmer did as an assistant coach all those years as the line coach, there were in big ball games, he would move his best player to wherever the best defensive player was. Could be at tackle, could be at guard, could be at right guard, right tackle. You know, he would move him around, and they would make those changes in the game also. Now, I know that he's had that conversation with Coach Pruitt. I don't know if Coach Pruitt's going to want to do that, but if you get a big mismatch sometimes, you move your best player. Bruce Wilkerson was the most famous of those. Of course, he went on and had, 10-12-year career with the Raiders. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of that.
How many coaches do that today? That's not something you hear about that often.
Well, you got to have a lot of confidence in yourself and a lot of job security if you're an offensive line coach to be able to do that.
You have to have a player to do it.
Yeah, and you have to have the right player to do it. Some players can, you know, we always talk about left tackle and right tackle. Well, some players aren't good at playing with their left hand down, so it's very hard for them to play the right side of the ball. So all these things go into it. Yep. But Tennessee's going to be a lot better in the offensive line, no doubt about that to me.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. On the offensive line, Brandon Kennedy transferring in, looks like he'll probably start at center. Trey Smith being back, really transformed the line. A guy I want to ask you about, though, is Drew Richmond. Physically, he looks the part. He was a five-star prospect coming out of Memphis University School. Hasn't really been able to put it together. From a coaching standpoint, can you coach attitude into someone, a nastiness that you describe? Can Jeremy Pruitt and Will Friend get that out of Drew Richmond? Because if they can get a little bit of that out of him, I feel like he could be a pretty good player.
Well, if they don't, he's not going to be out there playing. I mean, that's one of the good things about, Trey being back. You know, remember, he played guard last year, which is the best place to put a freshman, quite honestly, a true freshman. He'll probably play that left tackle. Let's assume that he does. That means that Drew Richmond is able to go inside. A lot easier to play inside at a guard because you got somebody to your outside, somebody to your inside. But just this is just me from looking at her outside end. Drew Richmond appears to me to be that fifth offensive lineman this time right now. Now, that's assuming, and I think it's a pretty good assumption, that they're not bringing Brandon Kennedy in here. If one guy knows him, it's your defense coordinator because he goes up against him all the time, so he knows this guy inside and out, Brandon Kennedy. You assume he's going to be there. Jameer Johnson is going to be tremendously difficult to keep off the field, believe me. He got Ryan Johnson there. He's going to be somewhere in there. So depending on who's playing where, I think Tennessee's going to have 6-7 really quality offensive linemen. One outstanding one, but quality offensive lineman, and that's all you need. That's the one area, the position on the field, where you do not need but five or six players. I've said this many times. I've probably said it on this show. There were many of our best teams in the 80s when Phillip was the line coach. We played five offensive linemen the whole game. You know, they're not chasing down defensive, you know, running backs after they intercept a pass or covering kicks very much. So I think Tennessee's going to be okay there. I really do.
Doug Matthews with us. You can join him, 615-737-1045, 737-1045, if you'd like to jump in, talk some college football. Juwan Jennings is back, as you mentioned, Coach, and he's been known for having some dog in him, D-A-W-G.
Yes.
That attitude.
Like Dog Nation, the site that
That's
we
right.
talked about.
That's right. Do you think we'll see some of that attitude on the practice field, or do you think we'll see maybe a more subdued Jennings after what's transpired over the last 12 months?
Well, I don't think he'll be subdued on the practice field. I don't think they want him to be subdued on the practice field. You know, he's whatever his penance was for whatever he did.
Right.
That's been taken care of. The athletic director reinstated him, and the head coach, everything he said about it has been very positive. It should be. Listen, this guy, can play a lot of positions, and he's going to be a handful for anybody to handle at the wide receiver position. He doesn't have the, you know, he's not a 4-4 guy, but he's physical and he'll knock you on your ear end. And I can't imagine any coach in the country not wanting him to be part of their football team.
I was getting that. They need him to be the Juwan Jennings that was there prior, right? That's the Jennings they need.
Exactly right. On the field. That's exactly right.
Right.
That's exactly right. And he's got a lot to prove right now. You know, he got hurt, what, in the 8th, 9th, 10th play, whenever it was, against George Tech, missed all year. I expect he'll have a big year. I really do. Now, when I say big year, that doesn't mean he's going to catch 80, 90 passes. But he's going to be a vital part of this offense. And when you have someone like him on the practice field and someone like Trey Smith, who are going to be leaders from a hitting standpoint, they're going to have defensive backs on that practice field with their what we call a head on a swivel, because they're going to be coming down there trying to lay him out. And that's what you want. That sets the tempo for this whole offensive team. There's no doubt last year this was not a physical, get-after-your-rear-end offensive team. When you got a couple of guys like that, and I think there's probably a few more that are like that, then now you got somebody that when you walk out on that football field, you may be overmatched, but you're not going to be out-hustled, out-hit, out-played.
Let's stay a wide receiver. I feel like they could be better at wide receiver than some maybe give them credit for, not just with Juwan Jennings. Callaway's a guy who showed he could get down the field. He could make a big play. Brandon Johnson could be a good slot receiver. When you look overall at the size and speed of those wideouts, does it give you some hope that maybe they can be a little bit better than people think?
Well, the size more than anything else. Remember the three big games that Tennessee plays. All 12 of them, yes, are big. But Florida, Alabama, and this year Auburn. All three of them play the exact same defense and the exact same coverages, a lot of man coverage that Tennessee does. You got two big guys. Let's just go back. This is one of the things that was always puzzling to me. You go back to the Georgia Tech game. Tennessee won that game offensively because of Callaway.
Yep.
Big plays. Never threw in the ball after that hardly the whole rest of the year. They're going to be able to. I don't know if they'll do it or not. My guess is they will. They're going to start wide receivers. You're going to have Callaway on one side, the potential of this. Jennings on the other. Two guys that are going to go up and probably out physical any defensive back from a physical standpoint. And then Brandon Johnson in the middle there with some of those other younger guys.
Brandon Johnson's 6'3".
Yeah, and he showed what he could do last year. So now the question is, and I know we're going to get into this position,
yep.
Who's going to get him the football? You can't take it down there and hand it to him anymore.
So, Coach, I'm really excited to have you on throughout the year because with the way practices are constructed now, and every coach in the SEC and around the nation for the most part does this, and they have the power to, so good for them. Guys are just, the reporters are seeing stretching for the most part. You'll be going and watching some practices, and I know that you'll know exactly what's going on. I'm really curious just to see how Jeremy Pruitt and his staff go about fall practice, weekly practices. I want to see their practice plan, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you about that. Gary Danielson said in an interview even, we thought the practices were soft, we being TV people who would go in and watch it compared to other practices they would watch, and he said Philip Fulmer knew that as well. What do you expect from how these practices will be run under Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I think you go back and you look at spring. Again, spring's different.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to be concerned too much about injuries. I say that. You want to keep them all out there so you get a good look at it. I think that they will be very fast-paced. I think he's going to do a tremendous amount of teaching and fundamentals. And then when you get to team, it probably won't be as physical maybe as some would think. Because, again, the old adage is, if I got a guy that knows how to hit and shows me he can hit, he doesn't have to hit, you know, 20 times a day or 30 times a day to do that. But there's no doubt this I think, is going to be a very physical football team. And some of that's mindset. Some of that's the way that you coach it. To be frank, I attended several practices at Tennessee when Coach Jones was there, and I never did ever notice that they were not physical practices. I would probably disagree with that a little bit. Now, maybe the degree to a certain extent, but I never thought that when I went up there. What happened to Tennessee was that, particularly last half of last year, they just became a very non-physical team, both sides of the football. I don't know if practice would help that much or not. Here's what I do know. You can't get into the season and suddenly become a physical football team. You have to do that because you can't go out there and hit on Tuesdays and Wednesdays in college football and play a game that Saturday. So that has to be done in spring practice and in fall practice, and I'm willing to bet that's probably going to happen this fall up in Knoxville.
Doug Matthews with us on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Doug, let's get into it. The quarterback competition that begins on Friday that's been going on. Keller Chris comes in. What type of personality is he from what you've gathered?
Well, watching him, and I've watched him on tape at Stanford. I did not watch him play out there any at all. I think, and this is an important thing to remember, the reason that he is here, a couple of reasons why, but remember, Tyson Helton, who is the, quote, offensive coordinator, and I say that because Will Friend is, both those guys are going to, they're both offensive coordinators, but the play caller is Tyson Helton. Remember that he had an opportunity. He was at Southern Cal for those years, and the team that they had to beat at that time was Stanford. So he knows this young man inside and out. I have no doubt that that is why Keller Chris chose here. And the other part of it is he knows he's got one guy to beat out. There's two quarterbacks. The competition between two guys up there, and I think there's genuinely competition between that. And I don't know that it'll be decided by the first ball game. I keep going back. Remember, Tennessee has those two games that they should be able to. Hopefully, right. This will be a team that I don't have to worry too much about ETSU and our old Vol coach up there, Randy Sanders. Maybe will help out a little bit on that. But I think the competition could be ongoing. Now, I think both of them are going to play. I don't know if they'll both play in the first ball game, but we'll see.
Chris was around in the spring, not allowed to participate in the spring. But how difficult is it, Coach, for a new voice to come in and win guys over when someone else has been that leader, that lead voice the entire offseason?
Not all that difficult, because regardless of what you say or how you say it or if you don't say anything, it's what you do out on the field. If he shows that he's the best football player, quarterback out there, his teammates will follow him. If they don't think he is the best quarterback, then they probably won't follow him that much. But listen, I've been around some great quarterbacks. Some of them didn't say much. Other of them talked all the time. You had to tell them shut up every now and then so you could coach a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's the way you lead the team. You have to prove your teammates that you, just like in any other business, you got to prove that you can do the job that you're asked to do before anybody's going to follow you and respect you.
Is there a personality type that coaches desire at that spot?
I think you would like to have a verbal leader. But, again, you can't go against the young man's personality. I mean, he is what he is. You know, his personality is his personality. You certainly don't want to fake it. And I think you kind of grow into that. You know, Peyton Manning tells the famous story the first time he got in the huddle out of UCLA. You know, he come in, he started giving him rah-rah, and I won't mention the offensive lineman, but he basically told him, hey, shut your mouth, call the play, and let's go run. Now, when Peyton the next year, you know, or probably the end of that year, he was more of a leader. Yep. So your leader doesn't always have to be. It doesn't always have to be a quarterback. Like I said, I'll be very surprised if the two verbal leaders on this team, by the way they play and talk, are not Trey Smith, offensive team, are not Trey Smith and Juwan Jennings.
There's a line of thinking out there, and it goes around this time of year with every quarterback battle, that will be a part of the talk radio discussion. The team will tell you which quarterback wins that job. Do you buy into that?
No. We talked about that Saturday. Heck no, that head football coach is going to make a decision. If it's close, and you know, even though this competition I think will be very close, I think eventually one of these two young men will separate themselves in one way or the other. I also don't buy into the old thing that if you have two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks, you don't have one. Don't believe that. That doesn't mean you have to play both of them. But obviously I think Alabama was very happy that they had two capable quarterbacks on that football team last year, and the backup quarterback ended up winning the national championship. So, no, I don't buy into that at all. That head coach is going to know, and of course, in consultation with his offensive coordinator, his quarterback coach, and maybe some other staff members. That's one thing that Coach Pruitt has on this staff. Not so much on offense, but he's got five or six guys on these assistants that he knows. Inside, he's been with them and coached with them, and that's why he brought them along. So he'll certainly lean on those guys, and some will have a little bit more influence than others, and then he'll make his own decision.
With competitors like this, how much of it is not playing favorites, the guy you personally like more, and you know the team attaches themselves to one quarterback? How much of it is that versus how much is who's the guy who makes me look good? If you're a wide receiver, who's the guy that makes plays? Isn't that who you naturally gravitate towards?
You talking about from a playing standpoint?
Yeah, if you're a player on that team and you're looking at the quarterbacks, even if I don't get along with this one guy, well, he puts the ball where it needs to be. I mean, how much of it is just, guy makes me look better?
I think it's always, all of us are friends, you know, and you two probably don't get along with Paul real well, I guess,
ever.
You know, because just, you know, Paul's Paul.
Terrible guy.
But in the end, it's who can win ball games. From a coaching perspective, that didn't play a part in it at all. I know people are saying BS on that. Listen, I've told John this story. I coached a couple of guys that I wouldn't allow around my kids. But they were game day. I was awfully glad I had them. And then I had a few who I would let them come over and babysit anytime they wanted to, but they weren't going to play because they weren't as good. And it still gets down to putting the best players out there on the field. And 9 out of 10 coaches that I know do that, particularly once you get to a level like you know, Power 5 football.
I was talking to a coaching buddy of mine last night who was a basketball assistant coach for years. He played for Jerry Green when he was the coach at UNC Asheville and eventually became an assistant for him. And he said that Jerry Green, the first day he was on the job as an assistant coach, he said, what I want you to do tonight is drive home. I want you to look in the mirror, take a long look in the mirror, and say to yourself, I will never recruit a player like this guy in the mirror right here ever again. He said, I'm not looking for any more choir boys. Talking about the guy that he had just coached. So there's got to be some truth to that.
Yeah, I think so.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about Tennessee's running backs. Jeremy Pruitt said in the SEC, ideally he wants 4 to 6 guys who can carry the ball. Do they have 4 guys that you feel pretty confident with this year?
I think they do, yes. I'm assuming London's a good player. He certainly was a very fine player at Michigan State. Limited, he'll probably be limited what they ask him to do. Looks like the Banks youngster. Coming in from Memphis. Boy, he's a good-looking young man, and I don't think they brought him in to stand over on the sideline either. And the biggest, the reason I think probably that he feels comfortable with that is, remember, there were a couple of pretty good running backs. Fields to me was a good running back, you know, probably a third-teamer, but someone you could certainly count on. They moved him to defense. So, yeah, I think that is. That seems like a large number for me of 4. They only play 1. You know, it's not a two-position place anymore. But if that's what he says he needs, then that's probably what he's going to try to get.
When I'm assuming that he's factoring in injuries at some point over the course of the season.
I don't think we'll see against Alabama, Auburn, and Georgia. I bet we don't see four running backs in the game.
I'm guessing three. We'll probably see three in those games.
Maybe two.
Maybe. I wanted to ask you about another position change also. Alante Taylor didn't really have a position when he got there, played quarterback at Coffee County, started out at receiver, now a corner, and getting some buzz to possibly be a starter at cornerback, that he's that good of an athlete. What do you think about a player like that, an athlete like that, being thrown in at cornerback to start his career?
Well, he was recruited originally by Coach Jones' staff as a cornerback. I think probably they told him, hey, we'll give you a look both ways at wide receiver. He got a cup of coffee there, and then, but he's a cornerback.
Like Charles Davis at quarterback when you gave him a cup of coffee there.
Somewhat, that's right. But he's a cornerback. From a talent standpoint, I think he's probably the most talented corner. Now, he's a freshman, and I don't think he will probably start. I think he'll be, depending on how George is coming into junior college, I think he'll be the third cornerback. Wouldn't surprise me at all if he is not a starter before the very deep end of this season. If not, he'll certainly play a lot. And I would say same for Theo Jackson at safety. He'll be the third safety starting off. I think he's going to be hard to keep off the field. Remember, there's five positions out there to play now. They don't play four anymore. They play five. Those two young men are very, very fine young players that can definitely, in my opinion, play in this league and play well.
Doug Matthews with us. We're previewing Vols camp, which begins on Friday. How visible will Philip Fulmer be at those practices?
You know, I don't know. I think he will come out there some. I think as the season goes along, probably less and less. I know that he has a tremendous relationship, verbal relationship, with Coach Pruitt, regardless of what some people say on some airways and type and send out on other ways of communication.
No, you saw those reports too, then.
He is not going to be meddling. And let me tell you why he's not. And I've said this from day one. Philip Fulmer will be to Jeremy Pruitt what Doug Dickey was to Philip Fulmer. And that is someone, go shut the door, say anything you want to say, and I'm talking about from a head coach standpoint. If I see something that looks a little problematic, I'll let you know, but it's all his call. I've been in one meeting with both of them talking about different things, and that's the way it's going to be. And anybody that thinks it's going to be that, they just have some axe to grind somewhere, and they sure as heck don't know what the hell they're talking about, period. That's anybody that says that on any radio show in the state of Tennessee doesn't know what the hell they're talking about if they think he's going to get in there and meddle. He didn't hire this guy to come in and have him listen to Philip about what he should be doing. He hired this guy because he believes he's the guy that can get this football program back to a competitive nature in this league. And believe me, there's a lot of Tennessee fans out there and boosters that want that to happen. There's nobody that wants it any more so than Philip Fulmer. He knows how great it is to be playing at the highest level of college football at Tennessee. And that's what he wants to get back to. And I think he's going to get it done. I think he made a great hire from that standpoint.
Coach, here's what bothers me logically about people that act like Philip Fulmer's going to meddle or be some problem for Jeremy Pruitt. How the hell does that make any sense for Philip Fulmer? I mean, is there anyone more invested in getting Tennessee football back than Philip Fulmer, a guy who spent the majority of his life working for the football program and the university? It just doesn't make any sense. Even if you want to act like that might happen, why would he ever stand in the way of anything Jeremy Pruitt wants done? He hired the guy to get Tennessee football back. It just doesn't make any sense to me when people say that.
It's normally the same group that thinks that he got the former head coach before him fired. They just have to have something to say, and, you know, anyway.
Doug Matthews.
I probably wasted more time on that than I needed to.
It is great to be back on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. We'll mention great radio on the weekends, Forklift Systems Football Saturday, every Saturday morning, 9 to 11, right here at 104.5 The Zone. Big Orange Sunday, the best hour-long discussion. Yes, it's even better than the hour we just had with Doug. And it's every Sunday morning, 8 a.m., Big Orange Sunday. And starting soon, we will have Coach to Coach at 11 a.m. on Saturday. Is that this week or next week?
August the 11th.
Next week.
It starts in other areas of the state on that Thursday, but August the 11th, and I was just out here with Dave McGinnis. One quick thing you were talking about, Pro. This will give you how coaches look at things. Paul was talking about completing passes. This was all against no rush and against defensive backs out there. And I was sitting there talking to Dave. I said, Dave, what do you think? He was now head coach and defense coordinator and secondary coach. I said, what do you think the offensive completion percentage should be when you're going one-on-one against the best secondary guys? You know what he said? Same thing I would have said, 100%. So when guys are making catches, pretty easy to throw and catch when nobody's trying to take that helmet off. And 100%, that's true. And it's normally 80, 90. And when you're going against one defense against one offense, skeleton, what we'd call skeleton, without the offensive defensive line there, if that offense is not completing about 90% of the passes, you got problems on offense, believe me, because it's set up that way.
Doug, it's great to have you back.
Little coaching point for you there. I tried to throw those
love
in.
That. We need to be coached up.
Yep. We need coaching points.
Play this back for Kaharski when he comes
on.
Okay?
I will. He needs more coaching than we
of course
do.
He's used to that pro ball. He came from up in New York. Up in, those Columbia guys are all alike.